Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
17-14 is the final. One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a late edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com and the Giants mobile app. Schmelk Meadow with you. Apologize for the lateness of the show. That is on myself and Sean O'Hara. You'll see a bunch of Inside the Film Rooms pop up on Giants.com and the YouTube channel over the next 2 weeks, and that's what we were doing, and we still didn't get done three guys that we wanted to do. So we are here now, though, and we'll be taking your calls at 201-939-4513. It's kind of a quiet period, Lance, if you're not concerned with the Super Bowl in the NFL. So there's not a whole lot of offseason stuff that started yet. The Senior Bowl is, you know, a week in the back in the rearview mirror. So not a ton going on. We could do a little Super Bowl. I could kind of bring in on what Howard and I did yesterday, which I thought was interesting. Let's start with, I guess, what Howard and I did yesterday. I'd like to get your take on it. I'm sure fans are going to want to react to that a little bit. So we kind of went through the – and we'll do this quick. We kind of went through the quarterback landscape. And the criteria that I put out there to Howard was, what quarterbacks would you most prefer to have in the next 3 to 5 years? And I phrased it that way because that's kind of the decision the Giants are going to be making with Daniel Jones, right? Long-term investment, who do you want here for the next 3 to 5 years? And I kind of came up with, depending on how you want to do it, 8 to 9 or 10 guys that I would definitely put ahead of Daniel on that list, and I don't think you'll disagree with most of these guys. Burrow, Mahomes, Herbert. I put Trevor Lawrence on the list. Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, and Dak Prescott. Those are the four. Those are the 8 guys that I thought fairly, you know, certain that I would have those guys ahead. Then the guys that we kind of had in the same area as Daniel for various reasons. The 3 big question mark guys I had were like, Deshaun Watson, because you just don't know what he's going to be as he kind of gets going, right? Kyler Murray with the injury, because the injury. And then Stafford, because of the neck and the injury. So kind of took those three guys, and I kind of put them aside because there's just questions with regards to where they are. Like, Daniel could easily be ahead of those guys or behind them, depending on where they wind up. And then the guys we kind of had in the same category as Daniel were Geno Smith.
After the good season in Seattle. Yep.
Derek Carr.
Yeah, Carr I'd probably put in that other pack.
You would put him in the top
pack? I think Carr's done enough over the course of his career where you have a good idea of what you're getting out of him. I don't know if there's as many question marks
with
Derek Carr.
And this is why I wanted to bring you in, just because I know because Howard actually had Daniel ahead of some of those other guys. So that's why we're all kind of on different pages here, which is great. Who else did I have in there? Kirk Cousins, though he's a little bit older.
Yeah.
So I think I had Daniel a little bit ahead of him just because of the – Kurt's 35 already.
Sure, yeah.
So that's why I kind of...
Though he's playing some of his best football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No question. And Howard is not a fan.
Well,
I know. Yeah.
That's a whole other can of worms.
Garoppolo, which I have slightly below Daniel.
Yeah, I'd put Jimmy, especially because of the injury history. You don't know whether or not he'd get through a season.
100% true.
But Kirk and Derek I'm putting ahead, though.
That's fine.
Just for those of you counting at home.
Tua. Again, the injury
stuff. Injury history,
you just
don't
know.
Well, also with the concussions, too.
Right.
You just don't know, yeah.
Tannehill. I had again. I've kind of him in the Jimmy category in terms of level of play as a quarterback.
That's fair. Yeah.
And then Brock Purdy.
I mean, there's not
enough
there.
Such a small sample
size.
Tiny.
It's minute.
So bottom line is that, you know, we're somewhere in like the 10 or 12-ish type of area with that. So yeah, that's kind of where we left it. And again, and then I went through, I listed all the average annual salaries for the quarterbacks, and just to kind of figure out what the landscape is.
Which is also where it would come if you're 12, 13 in that ballpark. That would be, you know, where the franchise tag is right now, it's just actually, below 35.
Yeah, the franchise tag is probably below that number.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got the numbers in front of me here. Kirk's at 35, and Jared Goff is at 33.5. That's 10 and 11. Then Carson comes in at 32, so there's the franchise tag.
Yep.
So 12, 13 is where the franchise tag comes into play, which is where we're talking about. Volume-wise, where you'd put maybe Jones in the conversation.
And keep in mind that Goff contract was signed years ago. So the market has...
Oh, absolutely.
It's then.
Yeah.
So just something to keep
Yeah, because these are based on average annual salary on contracts more than just a year.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. This is not just the franchise tag, which is pretty much out there on an island.
So that's what we did. If you want to add anything else in terms of context with Daniel in that offseason process, we can certainly do that.
Well, I would agree with the sentiment. I think that Daniel Jones is in the second tier, if that's where you want to put him.
That's
right?
Exactly.
After
where
the top
10,
you put him in the second tier, and you could really determine a variety of different criteria whether or not he's in that second tier or you want to do a third tier, whatever it may be. But you're talking about a player coming off his most productive year. There's upside. There's a lot of potential there.
And progress.
Clearly the coaching staff did its due diligence in getting that out of Daniel Jones. Now it's a matter of, well, show me again, right? I mean, I think that's what the Giants are asking themselves. Also, Brian Daboll and the coaching staff. Okay, hey, we scratched the surface year one. Now if we're going to invest in you long term, other than just smack the franchise tag on you, we want to see whether or not you could do it again. Of course, the individuals around the quarterback are going to change, and that influences the guy under center. But I think that's where the Giants are. I think they like what they've seen, but you're in a crossroads as an organization, John, because you're trying to determine, is this the beginning of Daniel Jones beginning a new chapter in his career, or was this just a flash? I think a lot of teams ask themselves that when you're talking about a quarterback coming off of a rookie deal. If we're having a conversation about a veteran and there's a lot more to go based on what they've done in their career, I don't know if you're asking the same questions. It's more of, is he going to hold up durability-wise? Are we worried about him now entering the back end of his career? Those are the conversations you have. Those you're not doing with Daniel Jones, but
right.
It's more of, I still would say, John, even though he had a really good season, you're not operating with a huge sample size still with Daniel Jones. I do think the jury is still out a little bit with respect to him.
Yeah, and I think, frankly, and that's why, in my opinion, I think where this is going to end up landing is probably a shorter-term contract. Because I think whether it's the tag, which I don't think the Giants would like to do because that's very difficult on the cap, right? Because it's all in 1 year. You can't spread it out and all that stuff. But I think, you know, probably a 3 year deal, because again, the Giants can see more. And then Daniel, as the quarterback market resets, if he does better, he could cash in even more down the road.
Which I would think he'd want to do as well.
Right. So that's my guess in terms of where this is going to land. And I think the better question, Lance, but again, maybe Daniel would want a longer term deal and get all the security. I don't know the answer to that question. We'll have to see what he wants. And I don't know if the Giants know what he wants, since they haven't started a negotiation yet. So, or at least as of a few days ago, they hadn't started a negotiation yet. I'll throw one other question in there that I think is important that I want answered. We saw the efficiency get better, the turnovers get cut down, the pocket presence get better, but the overall production in terms of yards, explosive plays, touchdowns, if you make the situation around him better in terms of weapons outside and protection, can you get more overall production in terms of yards and points? And I think that's why, and this is going to open us to a bigger, you know, off-season thing for me. When, and I wrote about, I'm going to write about this for Cover 4 next week on Giants.com. When I look at this off-season, Lance, even if it means the defense doesn't take a huge step, I'm willing to accept that, because I need to answer that question. If the pieces around Daniel are better, do you get 4,000 yards? Do you get 28 or 29 touchdowns if the pieces around him are better? I think that's certainly possible. I think we saw pieces of that this year. You know, he used the run game so much this year for key third downs and touchdowns. To me, his run game was just as important as his pass game this year in terms of how it helped the team win games and move the ball and convert third downs. So can the explosive passing part of his game and the Giants offense improve with better things around him That's still what I want to see as you try to build out that offense a little
bit. Yeah, I'm completely with you. Listen, we've had these conversations multiple off seasons. We've gotten callers, and remember, I'm sure if you go back to the predictions on the wall, how many people thought, you know, Daniel was going to get 30 some odd passing touchdowns. Yeah. And John, at the time, I said it's absolutely insane to make that prediction because the track record in the NFL is non-existent. And talking about a guy that had 11 touchdown passes the previous season, you think he's going to go plus 20? And I'm not doing this to pat myself on the back. I mean, he wound up with 15. Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. I could always use the moral and physical support.
For you guys not watching, that was me patting Lance on the
yes,
back, by the way.
But that's the realistic outlook. I think you have to look at a quarterback. Now, 15, if that's the starting point, and you're talking about, okay, you improve the weaponry around the quarterback, can we get to...
Over 25.
Yeah. Or I was going to say 25 would be my targeted number. I think that's realistic. I don't think that's crazy, an improvement of 10 with better weaponry. But the reason why I'm not willing to go that much further ahead is what you were talking about. You're not eliminating Daniel as a runner. You're still going to have that as a key component on offense. And just like Jalen Hurts, right? Jalen Hurts had 35 total touchdowns this season. So the Eagles are saying to themselves, Jalen doesn't have to go out and throw for 30 because we'll probably get maybe 7 or 8 on the ground. So if you think that way with Daniel Jones, if you can get 25 through the air, which I still think is on the high side, but let's operate with that. And then he gives you maybe 5 or 6 on the ground.
How many rushing touchdowns did he have this year offhand?
Jalen off the top?
No, Daniel.
Daniel? I was just about to look that up. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure, and I don't even want to venture a guess because I believe it was under 10, obviously.
I think it was 6 or 7. I think that sounds about
that would be right. About right, but that could even be on the high side. I'm bringing it up right now. Let's see. Rushing touchdowns this season. He had, this is the game-by-game log. Let's go to the totals. Rushing touchdown.
That's passing. That's passing. I mean, this is some great.
They really make it so easy for you to see these tallies. He had 7.
See, now this was my fault because you're so good at having these things at your fingertips. I just assumed you remembered, which was my fault.
No, well, I did not assume and remember and any combination of that. But so we're talking about a total of 22.
Right.
22, if you want to base that number as the barometer, then once again, could he get 10 more next season with better weaponry? Can you get to that 31-32 area? It's not crazy, but the reason why I think the passing touchdowns need to be more realistic is that if you're Brian Daboll and the coaching staff, you don't want to remove Daniel Jones's elusiveness as a runner from the offensive equation. You still want him to be able to take off. You still want to have those options in the red zone. So I think that run production, John, is going to take away from what you ask him to do as a passer.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't me?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And this, again, brings it over to the larger offseason question, Lance, for me. And I'll kind of slide the Saquon Barkley decision into this conversation now, right? You need explosive playmakers.
Yeah.
The Giants, you know, Slayton did it a couple times, but their true explosive playmaker this season was Saquon Barkley. And we don't have to relitigate the utility of the running back conversation that we've had over on this show for 5 years. I think you know where we all stand on this by now. Where, you know, running back, second contracts, gets tricky. It's a passing league now. You know, we've been through all that thing a million times. But at the same time, Saquon brought immense value to the Giants this year. He was their big play player. And oftentimes, at least for the first half of the season, when the Giants really won the majority of their games, remember, they won 2/3 of their games in the first half of the year. Their formula for winning during that stretch when they were playing, you would argue, their best football, was if Saquon makes big plays, the Giants win. If Saquon doesn't make big plays, the Giants lose. That was pretty much the formula through the first 7 or 8 games of the year when they started the game hot. And you can even take it into the Texans game, which was the Giants' 7th win of the game after the bye. And then, you know, it changed a little bit. The Giants won, finished strong. They closed the season pretty well. And they passed a little bit more. But until then, it was the Saquon Barkley show. So if somehow he doesn't come back, it almost becomes essential that you find a true number one wide receiver just to replace the playmaking aspect. And that's where I think this gets so tricky, where you want to retain him. You obviously have to put a price on it, as Joe Shane said in his postseason press conference. It's a walkaway price for every player. But you have to make sure you have playmakers, whether it's wide receiver or running back.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could bring in another running back, but you better make sure that that player also has the skill set somewhat similar to Saquon.
Good
because
luck.
Once again, it's to be debated, is he a running back, is he a weapon? Saquon to me is a weapon because you utilize him in various different facets on offense, but that's in the eye of the beholder and whether or not, you know, they put that value on him for what he does as a receiver in addition to a running back. But if you decided, let's say hypothetically, to move on from Saquon, do they identify somebody in the free agent market or the draft who they think, okay, we could bring him in and he could do, maybe not identical to what Saquon could do, but they can use him, John, in the same manner. Meaning the plays we have installed, we can swing Saquon out into the flat. We could do the same thing with this new running back. Or we can utilize him as a guy that can run in between the tackles as well as off the edge. If you feel confident based on what your scouting department and pro personnel department did that, then it's fine going that direction. But your point is well taken, and I bring up the running down numbers from earlier in the season. They had by far their best running performances within those first 8-9 games. I mean, you're talking about the Tennessee game, they had their highest average yardage per carry.
And he had 240 plus yard runs in that game, which is why, or maybe it was 130 plus and 150 plus, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, he had a 33 and a 68.
Yeah, there it
Those
is.
Were the
there
two, okay? Mm-hmm. But you ran for nearly 7.5 yards per carry, okay? So that's number one on
that
the
was
list.
Their best running game of the year, period,
sure.
By the way.
Mm-hmm. In terms of average yardage per carry, there's no doubt. The highest running total game was week 4 against the Bears, 262. Okay, so John, we're still in the first half of the season, right? Which is what your point was. I take into consideration, I know you don't put a lot of stock in it, runs for 5 yards or more versus runs for 10 yards or more. So they had a game, they had two games where they had 20 runs for 5 yards or more. They did that against the Bears. They did that against the Jaguars. And that was another game, by the way, Jacksonville, where they had over 200 rushing
yards. I'm surprised they didn't do that against the Texans, to be honest with you.
Yeah, against the Texans, they did not. The Texans, though, was the highest volume of runs.
17 runs for 5 yards or more, so they were close.
Just underneath, but they also ran the ball 47 times, if you want to look at it through that lens. And then runs for no gain or negative yards, meaning your cleanest run game. That was against the Panthers in week 2. And then you go to the second half of the season, not to say they weren't running the ball well, but none of those games that I just mentioned.
Well, Lance, quite frankly, they weren't for a while.
No, but I guess my point is, you know, they still had a 200-yard game against the Colts.
Yep.
They had games in the century mark. So, you know, from a volume standpoint, it didn't look terrible. But if you actually watch the game
and
break it down carry to carry, no, it was not nearly as effective as the early part of the season.
When they went through that stretch of the NFC East games,
oh, yeah,
that's where the running game suffered. Then it picked up again a little bit against Minnesota and Indianapolis, especially in terms of yards per carry in those games. But when they hit that stretch of game against Dallas, Washington, and Philly, they had issues running the football against three very good fronts, which I guess shouldn't be a surprise.
No, not at all. I mean, you're talking about under 5 yards per carry, but the Vikings game, 6 yards per carry.
Yep.
You had the Colts was just under 6. So you had some flashes here or there, but the consistency was nowhere where it was in the first half of the season. And this is why I go back to when you walk that fine line and the Giants won 8 games right by one score. If you remove Saquon from the equation, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you were maybe alluding to this somewhat.
Oh, that's exactly what I'm
okay?
saying.
Okay, so if you remove that and you don't have somebody that could fill in all those one-score games that you won, what happens? Now, we know games are going to follow completely different scripts next season. Who knows, based on the personnel. But this is why I'm not a big believer in what you did 1 year carries over to the following year. Right. Because if you win all those games by one score and it took a Saquon 68-yard run or it took a monster explosive Saquon run.
And those big runs are kind of what disappeared in the second half of the
100%.
Year.
100%. And then if you don't even have him in the equation in 2023, how do you make up for that?
And that's the thing. That's why I'm not saying you have to bring him back no matter what. You should never approach a player that way unless maybe you're talking about Andrew Thomas at left tackle because of what we've been
doing. No, but it shouldn't be a do or die decision.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you can't bring him back or if it doesn't work out for monetary reasons, and again, I think he wants to be here. The Giants want him here. You hope they can work it out from a business perspective, but sometimes it doesn't. Then you have to have a big replacement. Like, I'm not talking, oh, you draft a guy in the third round and you'll be fine. Like, yeah, maybe you get a new running back in the third round, that's fine, but he's not going to be Saquon. So then how do you make up for that loss in production, explosive plays at maybe a different position? Maybe it's tight end. Maybe it's wide receiver. Yeah. I don't care. But that's where it gets tricky because to me, again, I'll go back to my bigger thing. The Giants have to put better pieces around Jones the next year or two, depending on how long this contract is. So then you can see, all right, well, we know if you put great pieces around Dak Prescott, he can throw for 35 touchdowns and 4,500 yards. We've seen it, right? Geno Smith, right? He had good weapons in Seattle. We saw what he could do with those really good weapons this year in terms of production. And if you put, you know what Joe Burrow can do with these great wide receivers around him. Just go down the list. We saw how Josh Allen made the jump and they got Stephon Diggs. Just, you know, we saw what Brock Purdy could do with all those great pieces in San Francisco when, you know, they scheme everything
up. Well, and great scheme and coaching,
100%.
Too.
100%. Sure. Kirk Cousins with Justin Jefferson. Go down the list. Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, the offensive line, blah, blah, blah. You get what I'm saying here. I want to see Daniel produce at that elite level with better. You can't ask him to produce at the elite level without with the pieces around him the way they had last year. It's not fair. But if you get better pieces, can you get that elite production? And that's, to me, what this offseason is going to be about in one way, shape, or form. You might not get to elite status, but get better pieces around him on offense and see if you can, you know, become a top 15 offense, right? You got a little better this year. You got to around, you went from like 32 to around 20 or 22, I think is where they landed, somewhere in that area, right? 23. Yep. Better. You know what? You got out of the bottom quarter of the league. That's what we talked about in the offseason, right? Just get out of the bottom quarter. That's what they did. Win. But now, get into the top half. And I think in order to do that, you have to get better pieces. And that, to me, is, and again, if I have to take a hit on defense for another year and figure it out, I'll live with that. I need to show improvement offensively.
Well, it's interesting because I use Buffalo as a means of comparison. I know it's not identical, but if you look at what Shane and Dable had in Buffalo, they had the flip of the Giants. And what I mean by that, John, is you did not have a Saquon Barkley. You had Devin Singletary and Zach Moss.
Was LeSean McCoy there when they first got there?
McCoy may have been there, right? The first year, but I think they
actually cut him to try, I think, or they traded him in order to try to fix the cap, if I remember.
But even
right.
at that stage in his career,
he was on the way out.
He was much older than Saquon. So your explosiveness came from eventually the acquisition of Stephon Diggs, Gabriel Davis, who was drafted, who developed into a nice piece, and some of their tight ends like a Dawson Knox. It was the reversal. If they part ways with Saquon Barkley, is Brian Daboll and Joe Shane's thinking, if we bolster the receiving core and we get some guys back from injury such as Wandell Robinson, what we lose in the backfield, we can make up for through the air.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that he came from a team where the run game was, I mean, I don't even know if complimentary piece is fair to describe
and
it.
And where did Mike Kafka come from? Same exact thing.
Right? So they didn't have a Saquon Barkley. They had nothing that scratched the surface of Saquon, and they still found ways to have explosive plays. And part of it was scheme, and part of it was a variety of receivers. Well, could that be...
Also Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes.
Well, of course. Yes, there's no doubt about it. But I mean, I'm looking at around the corner.
No, I know. I'm just joking.
You know, we're trying to get to see if Daniel Jones's production could jump. And that similar thinking may be how they go about attacking this offseason. Perhaps. I still think it's nice to have weapons in both facets. I wouldn't necessarily put my marbles in just one basket.
No,
because
that's fine.
Giants learned the hard way this year. You lose that star wide receiver, John. You're back to square one, and then you don't have the running back to turn to. Where are you going? So there is risk involved in that scenario, but the individuals that are coaching this team and running this front office do have experience in the opposite approach of how the Giants attacked on offense this season. And I think that at least bodes very well for them.
All right, 201-939-4513. Let's get to the calls. We're going to go till around 2 o'clock today, so we'll get about another 25 minutes or so of content, and then we'll say sayonara, and we'll be back tomorrow. I believe, are you on tomorrow, Lance, with me?
I am indeed.
Yeah,
yep.
Paul can't do it, so I'm going to be with you tomorrow.
Okay,
as
he
well.
Tapped
so
out.
Well,
gotcha.
Yes, he'll be on his way to Chicago, I believe, or something. Or no, Boston, okay. Or something like that. I think he's going to warn Pearson's family that he's on his way back this weekend. And
well, maybe
say
Pearson
hi.
Should warn his family.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I already have.
Just make sure you're on top.
That's a good point, gotcha. Actually. Yeah, 100% right.
Make sure there's no clouds because he will yell at them.
Yeah, that's true. make sure you go subscribe to the Giants Huddle podcast. We got great interviews. I just did one with Rhett Lewis that's coming up. I recorded one with Sean O'Hara that's coming up. We have a front office edition coming up next week. A lot of good stuff coming up on the Giants Huddle podcast. Make sure you check it out. Subscribe on the Giants app, your favorite podcast platforms, or go to giants.com/podcast. All right, we got a couple calls in line. We have one open one, and we'll keep taking them as long as they come in. Let's go to Mike in Atlanta. He will lead us off today. Mike, what's up?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing all right. What's on your mind?
Two quick things I want to ask your opinions of. So the Daniel Jones contract situation, one of the things I'm not hearing on this show or seeing from a lot of fans out there is really a basic understanding of the contract situation with Jones, that if he's franchise tagged twice over the next 2 years, that's a guarantee of $72 million.
Yeah, that's correct.
That Washington.
Cousins. Kirk Cousins, it's happened with Kirk Cousins with Washington.
Yeah, 100%. Mike, and by the way, Mike, maybe you missed the show, but I was on with Paul last week. You know, and he was talking about numbers, and I said, look, he's never going to take less money on a long-term deal than he would get on the franchise tag. That's a non-starter.
Yeah, that's the starting point for
right.
negotiations.
Correct.
And that's where I'm getting to. So if you look at the contracts that are out there right now, where the starting point for the negotiations are, I think the Giants have to match the same contract that Derek Carr got last year, which was 3 years, $120 million. And that $72 million guarantee, that's the starting point for a deal. Otherwise, there's no reason for Daniel to really sign it, and he's better off getting franchise tag twice.
If he wants to maximize his dollars and that's his number one concern, I'm sure that's what his agent is throwing out there. That would not surprise me. But maybe Daniel would prioritize not getting every single cent. I don't know the answer to that. Generally, on their first contracts, players try to get, you know, the bag, which I get. I mean, I would too. I understand that. But yeah, look, I think you're looking to me, any conversation that starts under 35 is probably unrealistic, and then you got to see how high it goes from there.
Also, keep in mind, Derek was not coming off a rookie deal. A little bit different in terms of the comparison head to head, and Derek had more of a resume compared to Daniel Jones. So I understand your point, Mike. I wouldn't say, though, they're somewhat similar. I think when the Raiders were negotiating with Derek Carr, I think his agent had a lot more to bring to the table in terms of production because Derek had done it for multiple seasons. Daniel's a little bit different. You know, this is 1 year where he did really well with Brian Daboll. Also, from Daniel's perspective, I've thrown this out multiple times. If his philosophy is, I don't want to even entertain the idea of going through another coach and another coordinator because I've done that multiple times with the Giants, then the Giants have leverage, John, in that situation.
Sure.
Because they're going to him and saying, Daniel, you're coming off a really productive year. Brian Daboll has tapped into your potential. You stay with us, you're going to make a lot of money over the long run if you continue on this trajectory. So that could be something that he's thinking, and therefore you get minds that come more towards a middle ground as opposed to on opposite ends of the spectrum. I think if that's what Daniel Jones is thinking, and I think personally he should be thinking that if he wants to think about what's good for the long-term viability of his career, that helps the team because the team can provide stability where if he goes elsewhere, once again, you're back to square one.
Yeah, I just have a feeling based off of Daniel's injury history, his agent is going to intercede and say, you're going to have to come up with the cash. I don't think there's going to be a hometown discount on this them. That's just my opinion.
No, and I'm not insinuating
Thank
that
you,
at
Mike.
All.
Appreciate
sure,
the call.
Yeah, and appreciate the phone
And by
call.
The way, you very well be right. We have no idea what Daniel's going to ask for, what his priorities are. We're just throwing out different potential scenarios of what this may look like. And look, would I like fall on my butt, be shocked if they end up tagging him and that has how he ends up playing this year? I would not surprise. I'm not saying that's the most likely, but it wouldn't surprise me. Look, we've seen it too many times.
Well, also keep in mind, if you use Kirk Cousins as an example, I think Washington was in a similar situation, John. I think they liked what Kirk brought to the table. They saw somebody that was productive, but
is he elite?
I don't know. You know, yeah. It was sort of iffy. Do 100%. We want this guy to be the long term? Do we need to see it again? And hey, to Kirk's credit, it worked out.
Now, I think probably the Giants feel, again, this is me extrapolating, maybe I'm wrong. I think the Giants probably feel a little bit better about Jones than the Washington did about Cousins when
That's
he had
fair.
Free agency.
Yeah. Well, also, you're talking about somebody that is coming off a stable situation with a new coach. Remember, Kirk had some different coaches.
Yeah, same like Daniel.
Shanahan right? and Gruden. No, but also, I think maybe there were some question marks about the future of the coach.
Oh, I got
what
you.
I'm saying.
When he signed that first tag, had they changed coach that often?
I've got to look back the timeline.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
you're right.
But I'm bringing up the fact that, because remember, you know he came in with RG3. That was Mike Shanahan, okay? Then Gruden comes in. And also, Gruden is inheriting somebody. I understand that's similar. Dable inherited Daniel Jones, so did Joe Shane.
But they had a full year with him.
Yeah, they had a full year. They got to know one another a little bit different.
And
but
it went well. And it seemed to go well by all evidence. So
yeah. And once again, Kirk, I think, in a different spot in his career than Daniel Jones, too. So I think those factors limit how far you could go with respect to the comparison. But there's no crime in a team having a quarterback play under the franchise tag or the quarterback, because the quarterback gets guaranteed money. So Daniel Jones would have security. And the Giants, they open themselves up to, they're committed to their quarterback, but at the same time, they're not signing on the dotted line long term. The flexibility remains open. I personally, what I would utilize, John, if you're going to go down that road, I'd place the transition tag on him. Because then maybe you get closer to getting to a short-term deal where you say to Daniel, we want you back. If you want to speak to somebody else or the agent, you want to test the market, see what else is out there.
That gets dangerous, though.
Well, but you always have the opportunity to match, though.
Yeah, but what happens if somebody puts a contract out there that you're not comfortable matching?
Meaning like a poison pill of something?
Or whatever. You know, maybe someone throws them $45 or $50 million a year. Something ridiculous.
Sure.
That's crazy.
Well, but you know what? Then you feel okay that you did your due diligence and you said you weren't going to sign him to that number anyway.
No, but you don't want to lose the player.
No, of course. Yeah, but would you be willing to lose the player if his demands was $45 million, take it or leave it? I'm out of here.
No, then you franchise tag him. You can't lose him if you tag him.
No,
that's my point. If you use the franchise tag, you eliminate the possibility
of losing him. I understand. You're locked into that 32 number. Well, but then he doesn't have the chance to go and speak to anybody.
Well, too bad.
Whereas, no, I get that. Whereas what I'm saying is
well,
that
no,
you're...
No, though, if you put the non-exclusive franchise tag on him and a team's willing to give up two ones... Then
Which,
yes,
yeah.
but we
but
have.
I'd
have
say that's highly unlikely.
I mean, maybe for a guy like Lamar Jackson, another team might be willing to do that.
It's possible,
but we haven't really seen that happen.
I find it hard to believe that a team would give up two draft picks
and then
first
pay,
rounders for Daniel Jones
and then pay 40 plus million.
Could I
on top
see
of
a
that.
Team though, once again under the transition tag, speaking to him, negotiating with him? I could see that happening.
Which is what I think the Giants want to avoid.
I still don't see, and I understand the philosophy is it only takes one. I don't see a team giving him $45 million. Do you know, like, deep down inside, do you see a scenario? You know,
someone
like
just guaranteed Deshaun Watson all that money.
Yeah, but even...
Dude,
John, I get that.
I would say, I would say it's unlikely, but would I ever say it's impossible? I've seen too much crazy stuff with the NFL to say it's impossible.
No, and I get that. I'm just trying to think of rationally track record. Like, with Deshaun, despite his baggage... Deshaun had years of production.
He had tier one level production.
Where you would say, okay, I'm willing to take the chance. Daniel's not there. Now, if the Houston Texans, I'm just going out and looking at teams that need quarterbacks.
How about the Jets?
The Jets do. No, absolutely. And the Jets, they don't need to look that far. I mean, I'm sure they've paid attention to what's going on with the other team in that building. I still don't see them going to that $45 million territory. I think there's a line of demarcation for most of these teams. And if we brought up $45 million, $45 million would get us to Patrick Mahomes territory.
Start at 43, just so you include Josh Allen.
Okay, So Josh Allen. So then if you went to Derek Carr territory, you want to go, that's 40 and a half. Could somebody go to 40, Matthew Stafford? Maybe. I still think that's on the high side, the $40 million. Where I'd be willing to take the risk of placing the transition tag and seeing if the market can completely dictate the terms of the negotiations. I'd be willing to go with that. Now, if Daniel Jones had 2 to 3 years under our belt from the team perspective with production thriving with Brian Daboll, no, I would absolutely not consider the transition tag. 1 year of 15 touchdowns and 7 rushing touchdowns, I'd be willing to maybe go in that area.
Lance, too, likes to live dangerously.
I do. I'd be more than happy to live dangerously. That's fine. Go on the wild side, however you want to word it.
You are willing, I'd be willing to go. Codes, man. I like it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once again, there's risk involved in everything, no, as you pointed to, John. And
no,
once
the
again,
risk is much reduced if you put the franchise tag on him.
No, and I get that. But I also feel as if you don't want to outbid yourself,
right,
it's a good tool, right? Because you're, right, telling the agent, you're telling the player, we value the player, but we're also not going to get to the point where we're just going to pay somebody for the sake of paying somebody,
all right,
because that's what the market dictates.
And look, I think ideally you work out a contract. I don't think you
absolutely
want.
Absolutely. That is the best situation.
We saw how
and before free agency starts, by the way.
Correct.
Would be 100%. The best situation.
Yeah. I want to be pulling into the combine in Indy in 2 weeks and hearing news about a contract.
Correct. Have it all wrapped up.
That's what I want to hear. Yep. I want to be sitting there with Joe Shane on Big Blue Kickoff Live, which hopefully we'll do again this year, and I could talk to him about the Daniel Jones contract extension. That's what I want. But it's tough to figure that out. And look, we just saw how ugly or tough it could get with a guy like Cousins to the caller. I think it was Mike, to the caller's point. Once you get that first tag, the second tag gets much more expensive.
Well, it continues to go up, yeah.
And then
average
it gets
annual
really,
salary,
really tricky. Plus, then you can't move money around, right? That,
yep,
that tag is your cap hit for this year. And then all that cap space you want to do to do what I talked about earlier in the show, right? Bring in offensive linemen, bring in wide receivers, bring in weapons. Bringing Saquon back, it becomes really, really tough.
Because you don't have that placeholder.
Right. Yeah.
Beyond that first year.
Well, right. And just that first year placeholder is so big.
Yeah.
You just don't have a lot of money left.
Well, and also the risk is he plays on the franchise tag. He has another solid year. He now has increased his value. Forget what the franchise tag is going,
correct,
to be. In terms of negotiating then a long-term deal, he brings up his value.
This reminds me of the Dak Prescott situation with Dallas, too.
He,
right,
bet on himself. He had that year, and then he turned it into a deal. Just like you could also argue Washington didn't retain Kirk Cousins, but look at the guaranteed money he got from Minnesota.
3 years, $100 million. Right?
That was, yeah, a product of what he did over the 2 years on the franchise tag. So, yeah, there's always risk to riding it out as opposed to locking up a player. But I wouldn't fault a team for saying, hey, we really like what the player did, but we'd like to see a little bit more.
And sometimes that's the best thing to do in that situation.
100%.
Exactly. It isn't something to go nuts about. Let's go to Marty in Manahawk, and he's up next. And Dave in Texas, you're after him. Marty, what's up?
Hey, John, how you doing?
Hey, Marty.
I caught your interview with Rhett Lewis.
Yes.
And he brought up a player who I was watching in the East-West Shrine Bowl, and I was surprised that he brought him up. But there's a reason why, because he was all over the place. It was that defensive lineman from Ferris State, Caleb Murphy.
Yeah, he led all divisions of, I think he actually set a record with over 25 sacks this year or something crazy like that.
Yeah, right. That's what they were saying, that he came from Old Dominion. Definitely would love to see how he works out with the combine, what his times and stuff are. Might end up being a late round, like, you know, maybe even like a sleeper pick, you know?
Yeah, I have not had a chance to watch him yet, so I don't have an opinion on the player other than the stat you just brought up. But look, that's a guy that you roll the dice on, you know, maybe early day three, if you think you could develop him from a small school. And again, I think you hit him, Marty. I think what he does at the combine, you know, that's why the combine's so important in the All-Star games, frankly, for these small school guys, because you see them, they're so productive, but, you know, they're playing, yeah, against accountants, you know, and you know, future, yeah, doctors and nurses and lawyers and businessmen and whatever. You know, does his athleticism at the combine match up to where he could succeed against better competition? So 100% right. I agree with you.
Yeah, he had good size. I mean, he's I think he was 6'4", 245. So you know, that's a good size, and you know, and it ends up you know, how his speed and everything is, where they can end up, you know, actually playing him, you know.
No, 100%. Anything else, Marty?
No, that's it, John. You know,
good times.
Everything's fine.
All right. Oh, that's great, Marty. Thank you. I appreciate the call, bud. All right, let's go to Dave in Texas. He's up next. Hi, Dave.
Hi, guys. I love your show. One pet peeve. I wish they'd stop asking you two how you're doing, because you're just the healthiest people I hear about. Anyway.
Okay.
Dave, how about this? Next time somebody really asks me how I'm doing, I'm going to be honest with them, and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. We could go down that road. Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, I'd like to ask you what you think changing that field over is going to help in the injury department as far as legs and ankles are concerned with the Giants.
No
and
idea.
I remember going through this years ago. I've been a fan since the 60s. So I'm 81 and just enjoy your show. I love it, and I hope you guys do well. Take care.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying, tears, crying. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, I appreciate it. All right, so let me see what because this came out while I was at the Senior Bowl, so I honestly did not like read the full story here. Is it actually official? I think it is.
Yeah, I believe that they had officially announced it,
but they're sticking with a artificial
surface. Yeah, it's not going to
surface,
grass,
right?
Correct. Yeah.
So, as we went through the season, we got a lot of calls about the surface, right? And we made the points. You look at the numbers and the statistics, and the NFL put these out. It's kind of evened out the amount of injuries you suffer on turf as opposed to grass. But what we learned later in the year, as we got into more details with the stuff, there was a specific type of artificial turf. I forgot the name of it, but it was the type of turf that they have at MetLife Stadium and a couple other stadiums. That particular type of turf, again, these are according to statistics that got published by, I think it was outside sources. So, again, I'm going off stuff that I haven't verified myself, but that specific type of turf did tend to cause some more injury. So I think if you get to that other type of synthetic turf, because again, I just think with two teams playing on a grass surface in the Northeast, that's going to get ugly real quick.
Hard to maintain it, too.
Really is. Yeah. And again, I think the Giants would love to have them play on grass, but I don't think it's feasible. Hopefully you get to that other type of turf and you have some reduction in injuries, but guys, you look at this stuff. Some of these major giant injuries that people get really upset about, they didn't even happen at home this year. Some happen at practice on grass.
Yeah.
So it all depends. And, you know, their contact injuries. Like, the Giants didn't have a lot of soft tissue injuries this year. It was a lot of guys getting rolled up and, you know, things like that. Some guy in a Dory Jackson punt return slams into his knee and hyperextends it. Like, that to me is not turf related. That's playing football related. So yes, you hope it does reduce the number of injuries, but again, some of the injuries that Giants had this year were, you know, contact, broken bones, you know, things like that. So I don't know how much of an impact it's going to have.
There's only so much prevention, I think, that you could do when it comes to injuries. And there's other teams also. Sometimes I feel like we operate in this Giants bubble where, you know, the Giants are the only team that have been hit by injuries. Look at the Chargers over the last few years.
Few years, decade.
Yeah, well, I mean, that may putting it one way. So, you know, they've been hit by massive injuries.
And they've been playing on grass until this year.
Yeah, so.
Until last year when they got the new stadium.
I don't know how much stock I'd put into the fact that the turf is changing or they're going in a different direction and that's going to magically improve injuries. I think it's more of the individual, how they take care of their bodies, what they do in the off season,
and luck.
How?
Luck.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's involved too. But yeah, when you're talking about broken bones, you really think at the end of the day it makes a difference what surface they're on? Or you're going to tell me a guy can't get rolled up on grass?
Of course he can.
I mean, it happens.
I mean, Saquon Barkley tore his ACL in Soldier Field.
Yeah,
on exactly. Grass.
And Sterling Shepard, who went down earlier, I mean, let's face it, Sterling had numerous injuries
That injury was not turf related.
Yeah. Wandell Robinson, he suffered that injury at home. That was the Lions game. Not enough to operate with Wandell. You mentioned the Adoree injury was on a return, and he got banged up.
Kayvon Thibodeau hurt his knee when a guy blocked him.
And that was against
low.
The Bengals in the preseason.
Yeah.
Yeah, but to your point, somebody came at him very low. I really don't think that was
It was because of the contact. It wasn't because of the turf, exactly.
So all of those things I think you have to take into consideration.
No, Colin Johnson popped his Achilles on a grass practice field. Darian Beavers hurt himself. He was at practice too, right, Beavers?
Was Beavers at practice or was it game? I'd have to look that up. Not sure.
I thought Beavers was practice.
Ojulari was at practice too, right?
Yeah,
Ojulari was at practice. Yeah, he came off at the very end.
Great
that
point.
Was actually, Ojulari was the joint practice with the Jets.
Yeah, they
right? It was at the very end of that.
And they were doing conditioning and like light jogging at the end of practice and he felt it. It's like, remember Shepard when he hurt his thing? He was like literally like almost like half running. It was really weird.
Yeah.
Really weird.
So I think the more and more you analyze all of these injuries over the course of the season, I don't think it's the surface that is related to it. I know there's a movement. Clearly, a lot of players are pushing for there be more uniformity across
Bengals
the board.
Bengals game for the
Bengals game.
Yep, you're right.
Okay.
That was
Bengals. So it was the same game then that Kayvon was hurt.
You got it.
Variety of different factors that I think play a role.
But again, if the turf played a small role in that, then you fix the turf and you get fewer, that's great.
Yeah, but you know what it comes back to? And we've had these conversations on this program about injuries and how do you overcome them and so forth. And at the end of the day, it's more of a reason why, if you're Joe Shane, you try to add as much substance on the roster as humanly possible. That, to me, is the best way to overcome injuries. It's not debating, do we have grass? Do we have synthetic turf? Do we pour seeds on the ground? I mean, you need to have multiple options. And that's now with another draft class.
And that you hit it. It's the draft class. You don't have enough free agent money to do that in free agency. It's the draft.
But that's why I keep going back to, why did this team make a jump this year? It wasn't Joe Shane's first draft class. It was the guys that were presently here
getting better.
Also took leaps forward, okay? Dexter Lawrence is one guy, had a career year.
Andrew Thomas.
Yeah, so now you want to see those guys continue to move forward, and
Daniel
then you
Jones,
add
Saquon
more
Barkley.
Draft classes. Yes, that's how you go about making sure that in the event somebody goes down, you're still in a good position to remain competitive and run the schemes and get at least near the level of execution that you had hoped.
Yeah, and they've only had one draft class to do that. And you're right. Some of the top picks in the previous administration have stepped up and they've become franchise cornerstones, which is why the Giants were in the playoffs this year. And now you need to continue to draft well. And that's how you fell at the bottom of the roster, because you're not going to have enough money to sign a bunch of good veteran backups. It gets too pricey too fast, especially in a free agent class this year that, generally speaking, Lance, is not very strong, and everyone is always going to have money to spend. So we're going to be sitting here on whatever it's going to be, March 12th. I don't know what day. That's off the top of my head. Second week of March when free agency hits, we're going to see some dollar amounts for some of these free agents this year.
It happens every year.
That the players are not great, but they just happen to be the best player available at that position. And they're going to get paid so much money because a team like the Bears have a record-setting amount of cap space. I think over $100 million for Chicago. It's ridiculous. And these guys are going to get paid. And it's going to dry up real quick because it's not a deep class to begin with in free agency. Guys are going to get paid a lot. And then when you get to that second or third tier, they're still going to be a little pricey because teams have money to spend, but the players are not going to probably match that. So I think you're really looking at the draft here as you try to build out this roster. And the Giants have an extra third this year. They could get an extra five, six, or I think a six and a seven, or maybe two
compensatory.
Sevens in terms of compensatory picks. So that's what you're looking at here in terms of trying to fill out this roster. And it's not going to be a one-year proposition. It's going to take a couple years here. You know what I mean?
Well, 100%, because you can't expect to move mountains when also your general manager just came into the equation. You got to look at it from that standpoint. Right? I mean, he has one draft class. This is going to be year two.
And no money to spend last year.
Well, and that's what I was getting at, because if he just started to attack cleaning up cap space, do you really think at the end of the day he wants to now say to himself, yeah, I'm going to go now spend all the money that I freed up? Who operates like that?
No.
That's more of a reason why
and you have to
the
plan,
draft makes sense.
And you got to plan ahead for your own guys. Like,
exactly.
And again, this is not me trying to pour cold water on Giant fans. We get accused of this all the time, but we're just telling you what the fact of the matter is here, that if you re-sign Daniel, and let's say you bring back Saquon, and let's say you bring back Julian Love. So you bring back all three guys.
Or you also give Dexter Lawrence an extension. It's not a must, but perhaps.
Or Xavier McKinney.
Sure.
Or maybe you know, whatever. Your money goes real fast. Real fast. So yeah. I don't think this is going to be a big bringing all these big money guys from elsewhere. You know, maybe you do a trade to bring in a big time wide receiver from somewhere, but then
you may need to give him an extension though.
Right.
After you trade for
him. So you're talking about then using trade draft capital on the player and then paying him on top of that.
Yep.
Which in the end, if you really want to get a true number one wide receiver, maybe that's what you have to do and you have to bite the bullet at some point. And this is year to do it because you're picking later in the first round rather than earlier. Sure. But again, that's more cap space you have to allocate down the road because now you're looking at wide receiver ones, Lance. They're getting $25 million a year. The top defensive tackles are getting upwards of $25 million a year. Look at Trent Williams' contract. The top left tackles, $25 million a year.
And he's up there in age too, by the way. Yeah.
Correct. But that's what do you think the agents for Andrew Thomas and Dexter Lawrence are going to ask for? Like, that's where they're going to be. And they're great young players that have played in a ton of football for your team and have played at a high level this past year. So you have to plan ahead. You have to plan ahead. And if you're going to bring those guys back at premium positions for big-time money, and I would consider Andrew certainly, Daniel certainly, and pass rush analyst edges are generally considered premium positions. But if you have a really good pass rushing defensive tackle, you're telling me Aaron Donald's not a premium player at a premium spot? It's just hard to find guys that can do that like they can. So you're right. It's going to have to be the draft that fills out the roster. And it's going to take a couple years.
Yeah, and that's why I think Dexter Lawrence is probably the strongest candidate for an extension.
Well, he only has 1 year left.
Yeah, so. I don't know if I'd approach anybody else. I'm not saying you were going in that direction, but you know, even Andrew Thomas, I'd maybe let the rookie deal.
He's got
deal,
2 years. That's fine.
I'd let that ride
and
out.
By
I don't
the
think
way,
you need to
teaser,
work on that.
Teaser. They're probably going to pick up his fifth-year option. Just saying.
You're really going out on a limb on that one.
I don't like
bold
to live
prediction.
Dangerously.
February 8th, 2023.
I prefer to live safely.
Yeah. Well, I live a little bit more on the edge from that standpoint. The only other thing that I did want to throw out on the topic
please,
of free
please,
agency,
please.
You
and
mentioned
then we'll wrap up.
There's going to be a lot of spending that goes on. Remember, the cap's going up. So when the cap goes up, the average annual salaries are going to go up with them. That's more of a reason why you should expect, if you don't look at a lot of top-tier guys out on the market, they're going to get more money because there's more spending money as a result of the cap. So, I mean, that's just the nature of the beast that's going to happen. Now, listen, that means the Giants will eventually, as the years progress and perhaps they create some cap space, they'll have more wiggle room. But the wiggle room, it's only so much because when the cap goes up, the contracts are relative to the increase in the cap. That's my point. It's not like you go from, oh, we're going to get $20 more million of cap space. We had 40, so now we have 60. No, you're going to have to eat up a lot of that because the wide receiver deals, which were 20, they're going to go up to 25.
Right.
And the defensive linemen are going to jump. So you have to take that into consideration as well.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Lance and I will be back with you at the regular time at 12:30. We have no shoots on the schedule tomorrow. We're going to apologize for the late start today, but thank you for sticking with us. The Giants official connected TV streaming app, Giants TV, has original video content, game highlights, on-demand, direct to Big Blue fans. It's on free Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Giants mobile app. And, of course, don't forget, take your Giants fandom to the next level with a Giants season ticket membership. Stay connected to the club all year round, not just on game days. Memberships are now available for the 2023 season. Learn more about all the exclusive member benefits. Giants.com/tickets. Limited inventory is available. For Lance, I'm Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow. Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.